I'm Larry Lee with Brownfield Ag News Network. Congressman Derek Van Orden joins us, representing Wisconsin's 3rd District. First of all, Derek, you are on a couple of important councils and committees right now. First, the Ag Committee. Yep. Language just came out on a Farm Bill 2.0, the skinny version. You like the language that's in that Farm Bill, or does it need work?
I like a lot of it. And this essentially is the Farm Bill that the Democrat-controlled Senate in last Congress wouldn't pick up. And so, you know, we've been working on this essentially for 3 years, if you look at it that way. And I have a copy of it with me right now. The original one was just under 1,000 pages. And this one is 556 pages. And the reason that it's skinnier is because we got a whole bunch of stuff in the Working Families Tax Cut and Jobs Act. People know that as the One Big Beautiful Bill. We took care of a lot of the stuff that needed, you know, urgent attention in that bill. And so these are the other things that we need to finish doing to make sure that our agriculture industry is stable for the foreseeable future.
A lot of people are wondering about the things that were left out of the One Big Beautiful Bill and how they're addressed in this Farm Bill. Any major changes to the the things like conservation programs, forestry, farm credit, things like that?
Well, I mean, we've lowered a bunch of input costs, which are good. Specialty crop emergency assistance is in there for commodities, which is very important to us for here in the state of Wisconsin, for cranberries, for instance. And then there's some tremendous amount of conservation programs. If you get to trade, the food aid programs. What's interesting with these particular ones is that the government buys commodities from American farmers and pre-positions them or gets them overseas for food assistance for foreign countries. And what that does is it helps stabilize our agricultural market and also helps people from starving across the world. In Title IV, the nutrition, we've expanded the senior farmers market nutrition, which is fantastic. We've got provisions where you have to buy American food for school lunches. We all know that the school lunches pretty much went to pot under the Obama administration. And we took care of part of that already when we got Whole Milk for Healthy Kids signed into law. So we're getting whole milk, 2% flavored milks, and other dairy products back into schools. But we also want to make sure that our schools are buying locally as much as they can, and then nationally, meaning from the United States, as much as they can to help feed our kids. We got the dairy nutrition incentive programs are back in there, which is fantastic. Title IV, the credit, we've got rural water treatment. That's a big deal out here for us. You know, it's so expensive to treat water and get it up to speed to either like reintroduce back into the environment for irrigation or for, you know, human consumption. It's very expensive, these systems, and so we've got money in there for that. Rural development is pretty cool. We've got new mobile and expanded meat processing grants. So there's only 4 major processors in the entire country, and what we're trying to do is disaggregate the meat processing capacity of the United States. And we're just at Steve's place in Genoa. Got some pork chops for tonight, actually, and they should be excellent. And some meat sticks, as you do, you know, some teriyaki and then regular smoked ones. They're just really good. But, you know, we like to shop locally. We want to make sure that folks have the ability to slaughter, process, and sell meat around the country at a much smaller scale with the same type of precautions for health. And then Section 601 of Rural Development, we've got a lot of provisions for actually increasing rural broadband, not just talking about increasing the access to rural broadband, but actually making sure that it takes place. And the farther we get down the road here with precision agriculture, if we're going to stay the world's leading producer of ag products, we're going to have to, you know, use these innovative technologies, drone technologies, and then the precision agriculture for watering and adding nutrition and but you can't do that without broadband. So we've recognized that very clearly. Section 6305.
Hold on a second right there. On the broadband issue, I've sensed that some members of Congress have been disappointed in how broadband rolled out in previous bills.
It's been terrible. So here's the thing. You got a bunch of people in Congress that think they're experts in everything, and they're not. And so for the longest time, people were arguing about uplink and downlink speeds. and we've got to have a minimum this and a minimum that. Well, they didn't know what the hell they're talking about. You get 200 megabytes, you're good to go for the vast majority of applications that you're going to do. That's up and downlink, right? Well, so let's make sure we have a starting point. So what Congress does is they'll sit around, and all other parts, let me be real clear, the other parts of the government do the same thing, especially with the defense industrial complex. They will set a requirement, and then industry will start working towards that requirement, then they'll change the requirement. And then all of that money, the majority of the money that you spent getting to that one point, is wasted. And then they start again. And I see this in the VA system all the time. Doug is doing a fantastic job of clearing this up. And Pete Hegseth, this Sec War, is doing a great job too. We're going to stop paying these damn defense companies that aren't producing. So we need to pick something. We cannot let perfect be the enemy of good, because it's coming up on planting season, and we want to make sure that everything's this good to go as possible. So that's where we're at with that, with the rural broadband. And here's something else. Here's the dirty laundry part. If you fix a problem, you can't campaign off it and you can't fundraise off it. So a lot of my predecessors, you know, have been trying to get rural broadband in America since Al Gore invented the internet. Well, they didn't mean it, or they're incompetent. Those are the two choices, because it shouldn't have taken 20 years to get this stuff going. And we're about solving problems, not about fundraising or campaigning off these issues. I'm about solving problems and then looking for the next one to solve. So stand by for that. Another cool thing that we got is, and there's a real demand signal, it's expanded child care. So when our folks are working, you know, a lot of people work outside jobs so that they can farm. We all know this to be true. So the margins are so tight that people are working in town. And then, you know, they go home at night, they start in the morning on the farm, work in town, and then they go back and finish up the chores for the day. Well, if you can't do that and watch your child at the same time, you're going to need some assistance with that. And that is explicitly written into here. And I think that's really good. Also, the rural development business grants are great. So, and the Justice Department, 3 days ago, I guess, just came out and said it, that under the Biden administration, Caucasian farmers were being discriminated against, period. Not up for question. And you talk to our farmers out here, you know, that's my demographic. And when they were applying for these grants and loans under the Biden administration, they were not being granted them, and they weren't told why. The reason is because they were Caucasian males. And it's 2026, and the time for that garbage is over, and it is. So stand by. If you are a farmer, it doesn't matter what the color of your skin is or your gender or any of that stuff, apply for these USDA loans so that you can expand your business in rural areas, because rural America builds America, and small businesses are the engine that drives our economy. Well, if you're discriminating against people because of the race, which they were unequivocally under the Biden administration, that means that you can't expand your economic base and you go nowhere, and that's just BS. The Title VII stuff, research extensions, related matters. We got this done, and so the United States government was given medical students upwards to $75,000 to help offset their tuition, right? Which I think is great. The government was giving medical students money to help offset their medical bills. Well, we started talking, this was a year and a half ago, and like, what are we doing for veterinarians? And they said nothing. It's like, are you kidding me? We have a dearth of veterinarians, especially large animal vets, you know? And so why aren't we using American taxpayers' dollars to help offset the money for veterinary students? And now we are, which I think is great. I mean, vets are awesome, but a lot of people want to go into town and they take care of dogs and cats, and they get paid a lot more, and they don't have to worry about getting kicked in the head in a barn stall, you know what I mean? So that is in there, and that's fantastic.
Question about that.
Go ahead.
Will the federal program, should this pass, have limitations if they also get part of that newly proposed state money? Because there's state legislation going on that would help reimburse veterinary expenses too.
Interestingly enough, the answer is no. They will not be penalized for participating in other programs. Good catch. Yeah. So yeah, that is a thing. This is not an offset. It is supplementary, which is great. So we have to get more vets out there if we're going to maintain the ability to feed our own people. There's some stuff in forestry, but we don't do a whole lot of that in the state of Wisconsin. It's up north with the paper and all that. So, you know, down here down south in the third, we don't do a whole lot of forestry stuff. We got the mill out in Point that's having issues right now, but some of those things are, you know, they're going to help out with those guys. Miscellaneous provision stuff, livestock and other animals. We got a lot of stuff for biosecurity, tick eradication. I mean, just some real nuts and bolts things that I think are going to help across the board with livestock. Then we got some miscellaneous provisions in the back, that the Title 12, and, you know, we're helping reorganize the Department of Agriculture. We're trying to make sure that our farm service agencies are funded. It's just actually, it's a really, really good thing. And there's something cool here. We got the pilot program to support custom slaughter establishments. Mm-hmm. So again, trying to disaggregate the meat cutting industry. How do you do that? You allow other people into the industry without these incredibly onerous regulations. So we're going to have food safety. You know, it's paramount that we do that. But we also have to have the ability for small farmers to produce things, you know, that are never going to, you know, develop into a large processing facility. We have to set the conditions so that they can thrive also.
Question for you about that with helping disaggregate the meat industry.
Yep.
Also in Wisconsin, there are some state programs that help with meat talent development, and there's even a couple of high school programs developed by the tech colleges that have a couple of units on meat processing. Similar to the question on veterinary school assistance, would a state program funding interfere with federal funding if, say, an individual or an education program were to get that funding?
The programs are designed to work in a complementary manner. So we have not set, like, you know, this is just a number I'm making up here. You get a total of $10 from either federal or state, or federal and state combined. So we haven't capped it out like that.
Okay.
So I don't anticipate any issues with our folks getting, you know, what they need to actually not just talk about stuff, but to get it done. And I mean, it's really compelling. And, you know, some of our Republican folks really don't ever want to vote for the farm bill, but I believe this is going to bring them on board, a lot of them, because, you know, it's important to their constituents. They represent some ag districts also, but the ability to have our small farmers actually market their meat to consumers without going through all the rest of that crazy stuff, I think it's a really great thing, actually.
And we've heard over and over again that the vast majority of the consumer dollar goes to the middleman. So if you can take out some of the middlemen, you get more of that money back to the farm.
Yeah, and listen, in the third, we have a really large Amish population. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for them to be able to market would be great. Just the farm we're at this morning, you got about 50 head of beefers. Well, he's got to send that just like everybody else now. You got to take it to a processor. And we're not trying to put, you know, the small meat markets out of business at all. We're trying to expand the market, because most people aren't going to be able to do this anyway, because you're going to have somebody come there and look. You know, you can't slaughter beef in a manure lagoon. You know what I mean? You have to have a very clean facility that's going to pass an inspection to make sure that it meets health standards. But having to take your beefer down to the processor, have them slaughter and then, you know, parse it out to sell into individual pieces, it takes a lot of money out of the farmer's pocket. It just does. So this is a way, I think it's striking a very, very good balance between our small meat cutters and the farmers themselves. So that, you know, a rising tide raises all boats, and that's what we're trying to do. Because the more meat you can get through a system, the demand for beef is high. So the more meat you can get through there, you know, the more meat you can put in there, and it'll help expand the industry across the entire nation.